Thou
The living room's dark, save for light being cast from the big TV screen and the imminent sunrise that's teasing the one starry sky with whispers of morning.
Hey, George.
Hey, Lions, how's it going?
It's springtime. Springtime in the mountains. It's beautiful, lovely, it's nice. I'm not outside enjoying any of it, though, because all we do is play video games for the show.
Yeah, I know. Occasionally we let Mike out to tell us what the temperature is outside, but then we lock him back and chain him to the radiator where he belongs.
that escalated so much.
See, it started low and worked my way up. Now, actually, to your point on the spring, like just I normally go for a walk during the day during work, and I did that. And then we had a meeting, but it was like related to something outside. So I was outside for that, too. And I was scorched to a crisp. And I told my buddy that I walk with, as I said, hey, if we're going to go for a walk, we have to go inside because I'm pretty badly sunburnt. He was like, okay, John McQueen, like in Ohio, okay. And then he came and saw me and he was like, oh my God.
So, you get a delightful lobster red when you're really bad.
I do. And it was, I walked out to meet him in front of the building and I said, I have spent 2 seconds in the sun and I already can feel it licking my flesh with its radiation. And he said, no, God, get into like a bathtub full of lotion. Like what's wrong with you?
So, that's so gross. And yet I kind of want to try it.
So that's my experience with spring is it's like, oh, good. The UV index went back up.
Right. And I mean, you know, because you've spent a lot of time out here in the Mountain West, is like a lot closer to the sun. Like that extra mile matters quite a bit. So, mm-hmm. you know, and because I'm a fair bit darker than you. I know our cover art has us in the same skin tone, but, you know, I'm a fair bit darker than you. And even I sometimes come in and I'm like, I feel a little crispy. I should have spent more time playing video games.
Absolutely. Yes. And speaking of.
Yeah,
we played video games.
We did play video games. But first, if you want to support the weather forecast we do now and
yep.
free Mike from his shackles, at some point that should probably be the $1,000 tier is liberating Mike.
Like, oh man, that's literally what I was going to do right when you said it. I was going to throw it in there. That's ruined.
Like a tragic, the other thing I was going to do. Me.
No, just now Mike stays chained to the radiator because you screwed that up for me. Now it's not the $1,000 tier. So thanks. Mike has you to thank.
Well, whatever. He can't get to me. He's chained up.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I really want you to edit like a chain pulling against something metal, you know?
Yeah, I'm sad that I could think of multiple movies that have a scene like that. This is horrible. We're going to stop now. If we haven't just completely lost everybody, yep. you can support the show by subscribing. Best thing you can do is not leaving a rating and review. That's the second best thing. The best thing you can do, find an episode, make a referral directly to a friend. You know, give them a smooth in. Maybe not this one. This would be a weird one to start on. Some other one, maybe. And if this is the one they start with and they're like, yeah, I loved that first 5 minutes, then I don't know, reevaluate that friendship. If you want to go above and beyond, you can support us on our Patreon. All the links for these in the show notes. And I realized, tragically, ages ago, I bought a special vanity domain for us that I don't think I have ever said on the show once, but it's like a nice, short, easy to repeat URL. It's nogog.show, nogog.show. All of the stuff is there. Links also in the show notes, but you could also just go to nogog.show and get to our Patreon and all the episodes and all that crap. If you support us at any level, then you get access to the after show. Everybody gets the after show for whatever level they support us at. But if you go above and beyond, you can get shouted out on the show. So we have to thank first our 8-bit classics, Kevin, John, Jason, Yarno, and Jacob, and our 16-bit hero, Michael.
And if you pay us $1,000, we will organize a video game costume contest and take pictures and stuff and send them.
That'd be fun. Do we also get to judge it?
Yeah. I mean, look, if we judge video games all day long in the podcast, we're definitely going to judge them. that's
fair. I just wanted to make sure we weren't like just offering to do the thankless organizing work. We also want to do the Simon Cowell part.
Yeah. I mean, well, because we would need you and me and a third tiebreaker, and the third tiebreaker is the person who spent the $1,000.
Right.
And even if we weren't officially judging, we'd be judging.
I like the third tiebreaker, not Mike. It's the person
he's
who
tied
paid
to the radiator, man.
Oh Lord. Will any of this make it into the show? Well, maybe the whole opening will be like 10 seconds and no one will understand why. So we have a mailbag question. And I actually, so this came from a conversation I was having with a patron in our Discord. Discord's free. Anybody can join. But this person's a patron, which means I like talking to them more because, you know, they pay for my company. But they said, hey, guys, here's a random question that totally popped up out of nowhere and not from another thread. What's your favorite piece of company swag or swag in general that might be video game related? So the conversation we were having, because I'll admit I'm springing this one on you a little bit, but I actually do have my company made like 80s style lunch boxes, you know, like it's just like an empty box that just has the big hinge and the little like metal latch. And it looks like a Nintendo, which is already amazing. But then it's also covered in like 80s stickers, like fake 80s stickers and parodies of real 80s stickers. And it's one of the few pieces of swag my company ever made that I actually went to someone who, like, you know, had the key to the swag cabinet where like all the customer stuff was. And I was like, hey, give me one of those. And they were like, oh, those were for a special event. We don't have any more. You know, we gave them all away. And I was like, find one. I'll give you back my jacket or my hat or whatever. Like I want this thing because this is a thing I will actually display on my shelf because I like the company that I work for. And I like this, like all the video game crap on here and all the 80s crap on here. Like give me this. And so, God bless this person. They actually scoured the entire like back room of the office they were in at that time and found one that they were sure did not exist. It was like under a pile of like crap in the back of a closet that wasn't even supposed to have swag stuff in it. And he was like, hey, I found this one for you. And I think I took him to lunch or something. Like I was just
nice.
Like, yes. And it's been, that was 4 years ago and it has been on my shelf ever since. I love it. You know what? Yeah. I will, I'll take a note for myself. I will take a picture of it, and put in the show notes. Cause it's pretty cool looking.
Nice. You know, it's interesting because like, I don't really tend to be in situations that would like lend themselves to me getting swag. Because, and this was a important thing I learned about myself a few years back, which is I love, persons and I hate people, you know? So like, so I hate crowds, you know? So like anytime somebody's like, do you want to go to like a convention? And I'm like, oh, you mean like a whole bunch of people? No, like, but there's a bunch of video games. And again, like, this is another thing. Like, so they're like, oh, we could go to this video game convention. You like video games? I'm like, so I get to go play a bunch of video games that are either terrible and are a waste of my time or are amazing and may never come out. Or, you know, if they do come out, then maybe I was like, no, well, all this sounds awful. So I say all that to say, I'm not normally in those situations, but there's two. So I've got like the swag thing. And then I think like this would be closer to like merch or something video game related that I have purchased, but it's the thing I'm happy about. So one, the best thing I ever got was I did go to PAX one year and there was a Borderlands, like they were talking about Borderlands 2 and like all that sort of stuff, you know, it was a Gearbox or whatever.
I think that's right.
Yeah. And I got Krieg for free and that was pretty cool.
Say more? Like they sold you a person?
No, the Krieg was a downloadable character from the thing. And so yeah, so they were just like, hey, everybody gets the new downloadable character for free. And I was like, that's really exciting.
Well, and to I think your point, like that's not just, oh hey, you're here, you like video games, so here's a lanyard that has the name of our company on it. It's like, this is a video game thing because you play our video game, right? Like it is directly related. There are zero degrees of separation.
Yeah, so I'd say that's my favorite one. But then when the question was first posed, I wrote these other two things down. And then I was like, no, I don't think that's what they're talking about. But, you know, as far as video game slash, you know, fandom related stuff, I have a very, very nice Legend of Zelda Sword and Shield that I hang and keep in my house.
That is a good one. And, I've seen that one.
Yeah. And I love that Ichigo sword, man. That Ichigo Bankai sword.
Yeah, you still have that?
I still do, man. I still swing it around from time to time. Yeah, no. So basically, it is a full size like live replica Ichigo, like the Bankai sword that he has. That's like looks like a giant steak knife.
It looks like Cloud Sword in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, and it's delightful because the thing only weighs about 8 pounds, but because it's a huge sword, what you do is you swing it around and then you hand it to somebody and you just let it go. And every time it just plows into the ground and it makes you feel like a Super Saiyan, and it's fantastic. And I love it.
That, you know, you do raise an interesting parallel question, which is I don't have a ton of like video game merchy stuff, because when I was okay having like a bunch of tchotskis and crap in my house, I didn't have any money. And then when I got to like a more stable financial place, I realized I hated having a bunch of tchotskis around, because like you got to keep them clean and you got to display them and stuff. Like if I had a lot more money and I could have like a curio case that's all like custom lit and it's got a glass front so it doesn't get all dusty, like then I could imagine there's all kinds of crap that I would buy and put on a shelf. But right now I'm in like this happy zen medium. I'm like, I could afford some of these toys, but I choose not to have them.
Oh, one other cool thing that I forgot about until just now is my stepdad spent some time in Japan, and he got me an actual 440 steel Sakbato. So,
oh
yeah, so that's kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, how did I not know you had that?
I think you did. You probably just forgot, you know.
I've seen a lot of swords in your hands.
Yes. Yeah. And I used to have quite a few. I actually got rid of a bunch of swords a while back, and I still have quite a few. I think what to me was the eye opening part was when we went to sell one of our houses, I actually got them all up and displayed in an area. And the person like walked into the room, the real estate agent walked into the room and went, oh, you're going to have to take all of this down.
All none of this. No, thank you.
Yeah. But like she actually like said, oh. And then there was a substantial pause of like, I don't know what to do with this weird murder room. Yeah. And then like, you got to take all this down. I was like, oh, is this weird? I didn't think this was weird. Maybe this is weird. I do have a lot of swords.
Yeah, I think there's, even if you don't know anything about swords, if they look like they are from a known point in history, right? It's like, oh, George is a big Civil War buff, and so he has like the crossed sabers and he has, you know, like muskets and stuff, right? And it's like, oh, he's a student of history or that kind of thing. Like that's different than if you have like a pile of katanas like just thrown haphazardly. And that's also different than if you have what is clearly like your shrine to Naruto room, where it's like the scroll. And I'm not, there's nothing wrong with any of these people. I'm just saying, as a real estate agent, those are three very different houses to deal with.
Right. And again, like, you know, when you're trying to sell it as I could see myself here, it's like, unless you're exclusively, you know, trying to sell to people who really like Naruto, it's probably going to be a drawback. It's like, hey, what do you think of that last house? You mean the one with the weird Naruto room? No,
no, I'm a Bleach man.
Yeah, take that, Naruto. Longest running series.
God, is it? It probably is.
Well, if you include Boruto, which I swear to God
isn't it Baruto? Like Naruto and Baruto?
Maybe. I don't know. I've never heard it. I've only read it. but when it was like Boruto, whatever, right? Baruto. So I was like, no. All right, it's fine. It'll just be short. But Baruto is 300 episodes now.
Oh, my God.
Which is longer than, I believe, the original run of Dragon Ball Z.
It's longer than Dragon Ball Z plus Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball is only like 60 episodes.
Yeah, and I think Dragon Ball Z is like 250 or something like that. So it's on par.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the sequel, you know, like that's not Naruto. Yeah. Ooh. So
if we have time and the conversation comes back around to it, the after show might be an interesting place to talk about manga, because I have some thoughts about manga.
But what are you playing and why should I care?
Well, I got to play this game called Ascent, and I think this might be the best way to find out if someone actually likes Metroidvanias. So this is an indie game made for the Pico 8 Fantasy console, and it's really short. It's really short. So if you've never played a Pico 8 game or you're not familiar with that, imagine like Game Boy Color, right? Like, actually, imagine like Atari played on a Game Boy, like super, super simple graphics, very small resolution, low fidelity sounds. It's an imaginary console. So like, what if this console existed and now you can make games for it? What's cool about it is that the games run in the browser and they're two button games. So you can usually just pick them up on a keyboard if you don't have a controller attached. And a lot of people make and give away their Pico 8 games, which is amazing. Like, just, hey, I made a video game here, play it for free, and it's short, so you're not asking me to put in like 150 hours. What's cool about Ascent is it's the whole Metroidvania experience in like seriously about 20 minutes. So you wake up in this hostile environment with like a crashed spaceship, and you need to get out, and you do that by amassing like the powers you typically amass in a Metroidvania. So you get like a dash and a double jump and like a ledge grab and stuff. So like, just, but it's all super condensed. The music is really good. The story is actually kind of interesting, and it's light, right? But it's enough that you're just like, oh, well, I wonder like what's going on over here and what's going on over there, but you never find out. So it just lets you, your brain kind of like toy around with it. And it's just, I mean, the fact that it's free is amazing. I would say this game is worth paying for. And I think the developer takes donations. If you're going to play it, check out on his itch. There will be a link in the show notes. But I just love this space of, I made like a single cordial, right? Instead of saying I baked you a chocolate wedding cake, but it's made with like off the shelf cake mix, so it just tastes like a lot of an like average quality thing. It's, I made this really, really great thing, but I only had enough time to make a tiny amount of it. And I have realized as I have gotten older and as my palate has become more refined, that that's probably a thing we need more of. So if I'm able to kind of work it into my rotation, I might want to pull on this thread some more in the future, where like I try some more of these like fantasy console, like indie Pico 8 games. A lot of people make Game Boy games and give them away for free because there's a really good like Game Boy engine for making games that will run on a real Game Boy. Like, you can flash them to a cartridge and actually put them in a real Game Boy. I think there's a whole space here that has been around for a long time and I just haven't really gotten into, but Ascent is super cool. I'm still playing a ludicrous amount of Final Fantasy 14 because I'm not even into the final expansion yet, and it's an MMO, so they never end. But the last one, and this will eventually kind of bleed into my main topic, is I've been playing this game called Theater Rhythm. I think that's how it's pronounced, like theater and rhythm, theater rhythm. And it's a rhythm game that is just Final Fantasy universe music. So like all the mainline Final Fantasies, but then also a bunch of the offshoots, which have like remixes, but also some of their own music and stuff. And it's not trying to be an instrument. Like, it's just a pure rhythm game where it's like, press these buttons on the beat, press the arrow, you know, hold the thing down, then press the arrow. Like, it's a more pure rhythm game because you play it. It was originally on the 3DS. They've now just re-released it for like grown-up consoles. And I had never played it because I thought, based on the visuals and the way it was marketed, that it was like a scammy gotcha mobile game. Like, oh, we'll give you two songs for free, and then we will bug you every 2 seconds to pay us $1.99 to unlock more songs. But no, they just gave it a Funko Pop art style for some inscrutable reason. But like, all the songs are just included in the version of the game I have. Like, they're originally, you could buy DLC, but then they re-released the game with all of the songs included. And they were just like, here you go, just buy the game with the music. And it's just, it's fun. It's simple. It's not like trying to play a Rock Band, you know, Plastic Guitar or something, but I like rhythm games a lot. So it's just, I love this music. I love this universe. I like rhythm games because they're a snackable kind of game that I actually can engage with. Like, I can pick up a game, play a couple songs, and then put it back down and feel good about that, right? Like, I don't want to pick up Super Mario World, play one level, and then not play it for another week. But I could do that with a rhythm game, right? Like, I mean, how many times with Rock Band where we were like, oh, we got to go to work, but we have enough time for two songs. And then we were like, turn on my PS3, play a couple songs, and then friggin' drive to Blockbuster. Like, that's, I like that a lot. And I realized when I started playing this, I was like, oh, oh, I actually really missed this. So it because it's snackable, that means there's a chance it will disappear and I will forget about it forever. But it's pretty fun. I'm actually enjoying it quite a bit.
Yeah, no, actually, looking at the, I kind of Googled it while you're talking, looking at the artwork, I would absolutely assume that this is, you know, like a mobile game or something like that.
Right? Told the artist, like, can you make it look cheap?
Yeah, can you make it look like we're trying to rip them off? You know what it looks a little bit like? It looks a little bit like Fallout Vault, you know?
Yeah, the paper doll where everything is obviously like a single component. Almost like how they animate South Park.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, looking at this, I would be like, I would not guess that this is a, you know, a PS4 game that is meant to be played on the PS4 that you just buy. You know, I'd say like, oh yeah, this looks like a mobile game, you know? So yeah, yeah. I can get on board with that viewpoint.
But before I get to my meteor question for you, what are you playing? Why should I care?
So, I'm still playing tons of Cyberpunk 2077. I actually finished it tonight. So, yeah.
The very thing you thought you might never do.
I might not. And the weird thing is that the game itself, like the main quest, is like ridiculously short. But it's nice because there's so much extra content that basically I said like, okay, I'm going to actually start like engaging in the main plot. And then they said, okay, cool. And it's done. I was like, oh, all right.
Now go back to side stuff, monkey.
Because I think that what they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of say like, hey, we're selling you a universe and an experience. Whenever you're ready for the game to be over, you're like 5 hours away from the game being over, you know? But one of the things that I think that they did. So I actually said, you know what? I'm going to try another run through, you know? So I booted it up, made a new character. No, does not. Well, it basically, when you finish it, it just dumps you right in before the final like domino that you push to end everything. And then says, go do your thing. But I think that the ending and I think that the ending is highly variable because there's some stuff that happened in the end that I was like, this would not have made any sense unless you were specifically drawing on some of the stuff that I did during the game. Like they gave me choices where I'm like, if I hadn't completed this person's storyline, it wouldn't make sense for you to even offer for me to do this, you know? Also, the other thing that makes me think that is the case is because certain chunks, the actual ending, you know, where you like make the final big decisions and all this kind of stuff, that was great. The section that I did right before that was not well polished, you know? Like, not terribly, but I was like, man, the encounter is kind of fuzzy and like people are showing up at weird times and it doesn't flow well and it doesn't, you know, like a lot of weird question marks here. And I think it's because there's probably like 10 different endings. So they didn't bother polishing any one particular one. So I was like, I think that's the case. So anyways, I say that to say that that was my, you know, first playthrough. So this time I picked a different gender, different starting conditions, all sorts of stuff. And I got to say, so far, it is wildly different. Like the first 30 minutes of the game is basically a completely different game.
That's, you know, fantastic.
Right?
Like those choices actually matter. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I was like, okay, you know, because in the beginning, and this is minor spoilers, I started off as a street kid. So I started off in this bar and I went and talked to like this fixer, you know, and he said, go steal this car. And I'm going to go steal a car. And then this guy, Jackie, stopped me. And then we got like arrested and then we got thrown out on the street. And then Jackie was like, hey man, I know I like just tried to stop you, but hey, a gig's a gig. You want to go hang out or whatever? And I was like, yeah, sure, man. Let's go hang out. And then there's this like beautiful little montage about us being friends and like becoming friends. And then I strike out on my own and all this sort of stuff. This time I was like, no, I'm going to pick the corpo background, you know? And so it's all like me being assigned to like murder somebody, but in a corporate atmosphere, you know? And like, I'm like this like weird, you know, like, and I'm like, I don't usually do this. And then the person's like, look, man, you know, I basically own you for these reasons and blah, blah, blah. And it was all like, and then you like take a helijet down to like this bar. But the thing is that the thing that immediately threw me off is that you start like looking in the mirror, like as you're kind of throwing up. And then Jackie called me on like my holo, you know, like on my HUD. And it was like, hey, how are you doing? I'm like, I don't know you yet. Oh, wait. And the thing is, you already know this guy, you know, he's, and so then like, a bunch of like stuff happens, and then he like picks you up. He's like, hey, come back to my place. Now I'm like sure that I get you right. And then that exact same montage plays of like us becoming close friends. I'm like, okay, now we're in and playing the same game. But I was like, that first 30 minutes is completely different. That's kind of cool, you know?
Well, and would, especially on a first playthrough, would go on to color all of those things that happen after, even if they're the same, right?
Right.
Because you are now bringing whatever that happened in that first 30 minutes to the table. I thought for sure you were going to be like, yeah, it turns out it's basically the same game. This is fantastic news.
Yeah, no, and one of the things that was really interesting was that when I was first playing it, now they right the ship towards the end, but like, you know, I was playing initially is you know, I talked to this one guy. He's like, hey, I'll front you some money so you can go do the thing. And he gives me like $800, which means my total worth up to like $850, right? So at this time, the guy says like, hey, here's the money to pay the fixer to like go kill this person. And so it added $14,000 into my account of $270,000 because I'm a corpo, right? I work for this huge corporation. I'm like, huh, well, that's kind of cool. But it made it hurt a lot more when I restarted the game, when I actually got through all of that. Because oh, that's the thing is that one of the guys like walks up to you and says like, and they say like, were you hired to do this thing? And I'm like, oh, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he's like, you are no longer, your services are no longer needed at Arisaka. And so he says like, and so all of a sudden it just shows my bank account and it shows all of the money leaving it.
No.
He was like, your access to company funds has been discontinued. All of your cyberware that his company paid for will cease to function in the next 30 minutes. This completes the termination process.
Jesus Christ.
Like, I was like, oh my God, you know, like everything's fuzzy because like I had like stuff that made me hear better. And it was just, I was like, this is, so they really pushed the fall from grace. And I'm like, this is better storytelling. Like I feel like a different person. Like this is good. It's well done. So.
Well, that's somewhere in the game that had to be there because the whole cyberpunk thing is like mega corporations are evil and what sort of horrible things would they be doing if they controlled like the cybernetics in people's brains? Right. So it's, I'm glad to hear like that's, you know, if you pick that background, it's like, that's where you start. You start with mega corporations are evil. Look at what they did to you.
Yes. Still playing that. I played the new. So one of the things I'm going to try to start bringing to the table on these once a month episodes that we do is I'm going to download and just at least take a peek at the PlayStation monthly games, you know? So I did that and I will take a peek at them and I peeked.
I'm committing to peaks only.
Only. So the thing is I booted up Meet Your Maker, right? And so it looks like it's a first person kind of a thing, but basically is I was playing a different game and Lizzie was sitting on my lap and I said, oh, let me try this other one. And I booted up and literally it put me in a room. It's like 3D and it's all poorly lit and it's all like dark red. And like literally what happened was that came on the screen and I just paused for a minute. I said, what's this rated again? and I went into it and it was like pending rating. And Megan said like, yeah, it says it's pending rating, but it's probably going to get an M for mature. I'm like, okay, so we're going to try something different. But to their credit, right, I did want to give a quick shout out to the game for a great job telegraphing what your theming is. If literally in the first room you put me into, I was able to go like, I don't think I should be playing this with my 4-year-old in the room. So good on them for that. I tried playing Tales of Iron and it, like, it falls.
As in of Symphonia, like that series?
No, interesting. Okay. It's Tales, T-A-I-L-S of Iron, because you play as like rats trying to fight back evil frogs.
Oh,
and it seems like it would be really interesting because it's got very like deep narration and, you know, you work for the rat king who, you know, was able to stop the frog invasion, but now he's old. So you've got to like pick up the mantle and it's medieval themed, you know? And I was like, yeah, man. Yeah, let's do it. And then I sat there for 20 minutes and waited on them to let me play the game. And then I got frustrated and I stopped. Because I can't tolerate it, man. You know, if they're like, okay, so, you know, here's how you swing your sword. Got it. All right, cool. I figured that out in the first couple of seconds because the first thing I did was pick up the controller and press all the buttons. It's like, okay, now if you want to dodge, you press circle. Yeah. If you want a quick dodge, you press this. I'm like, okay. If you want to do this, you do this. And if you want to do this, you do this. And here's how the food mechanic works. And here's how the drinking mechanic works. And here's how this mechanic. I'm like, I don't need to know all that. Let me go play the game. Let me just let me just try some stuff, man. And then like put it gating, because that's the thing, is that what they're doing is they're saying like, here's the tutorial. I'm like, no, put in gating mechanics. Let me play the game for a little bit and then put something in the way that says, nah, man, you can't get any further than this unless you can do a double dodge, like Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight was amazing at that sort of stuff. And even though I hate Metroidvanias, I probably put 10 hours into that game before I was like, yeah, I think I'm done, you know? But after 20 minutes, I was like, okay, I had an hour to play video games and now I've wasted 20 minutes of this game shouting at me of how much fun it's going to be if I get to play it. I'm going to go back to playing something that I know is fun because I don't want to lose this other 40 minutes of my life. So that was Tales of Iron. And the other game I started playing specifically to have a new thing to talk about for this is Star Trek Online. And this will lead into my meaty subject, which we can just pick which one we want to do or if we want to do both or whatever.
This is interesting to me because you texted me and said like, oh, Star Trek Online, probably not going to be what I want it to be, but I'm hopeful. And I was just like, I think the only Star Trek game I ever played was on like the Super Nintendo, or maybe on like a Mac in school or something when I was a kid. And it was, I do not remember it fondly. So like when you said Star Trek and video game, all I could think was like, I don't, have they made a good Star Trek video game? I know there's a bunch of them.
There are. They're all shovelware, as is this one. So yeah, it's just bad, you know. A couple of things that it does very, very poor. So the interesting thing about this one is that it, in my opinion, lacks all polish. The guts of a decent game might be there, but the game, so one thing that does like at the beginning is you can pick which version of Starfleet you want to be in, or, you know, so you can pick to be like in an earlier version of Starfleet, the mid version of Starfleet. You can choose to be a part of the Klingon Empire. You can choose to be a part of, you know, like the Romulans. You know, I'm like, yeah, man, this is pretty cool, you know? So you pick that, but like you're missing, it's got poor animation, small hitboxes. The game feel is awful. Like literally at one point they're like, here's how phasers work. And I'm like, okay. So I go running into an area and it's like, okay, now point your phaser at this person and shoot. And I do it and it just hits a red line passed from my phaser, made contact with the other person. I watched their hit point bar go down until they fell over. At no point did they look like they were being shot by a laser beam. Did they try to duck and cover or move out of the way? They were also shooting at me, which has caused my screen to turn a little bit red, but it had no other impact to me whatsoever. And I'm like, so is this like punch for a punch where we just wail on each other until one of us drops? I'm like, this doesn't feel like I just got into a dueling cyber thing, whatever, you know? So I was just like, yeah, no, this is no good. This is not.
Is this a free-to-play game?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
No, I didn't spend any money on it.
Yeah. No, I'm sure you didn't. but the reason I say is because I looked up some images and I noticed a lot of them are like reviews of free-to-play games and like, you know, is Star Trek Online worth blah 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 blah? And man, I don't want to hashtag not all free-to-play games, but like, it's statistically going to have a certain kind of experience that you and I, and probably a lot of people who would listen to us talk about video games from the 1980s and early 90s, like are not gonna like, because it has to get you into a loop where the end of that loop is you spending money and then the loop starts over. Right. And so no, you having a good time or this being like a cool Star Trek thing, neither of those are required. They might be helpful for a certain kind of player, but if you're just talking about people in general, some people sit in front of slot machines all day long and just, they don't even like pull the arm. They just press the button on like modern slot machines. So like, they don't even get the satisfaction of the like chunk, right? And, yeah. And they just, there's a certain kind of brain, unfortunately for the people who have them, that just, they're not enjoying it. They would probably say they are, right? But it's anytime I see, I recoil more from free to play than mobile game. Like if a mobile game is $4.99, but it's a one-time payment, I'm like, I don't know. I don't really like touch controls, but maybe like I have been wrong before, but free to play. Oof.
The only free to play games I've actually enjoyed and have spent some money on are idle games, you know, because
yeah. I mean, there are Rocket League went free to play, right? There are good free-to-play games. It's just statistically,
yeah, few and far between. And that was the thing. I wasn't expecting much from it, but I was like, this will probably give me something to talk about, and it did. So my meaty subject that we can talk about yours and then talk about mine is so one of the things that they brought that the first thing you have to do is you have to pick what race are you, right? And I thought about it, and I'm like, I really want to discuss this because I don't really have a hard opinion on it, but I was like, I looked at all of the things, and they described all the races as they are in Star Trek, right? But it didn't give me any of the mechanics around it. And I was like, I would be a little frustrated if like one person was playing as a human and another person was playing as a Klingon, and they were under the hood statistically identical, right?
Yeah, it's just a coat of paint.
Right, like if it's just a coat of paint. But then like you could take it back and be like, oh, well, but is that enforcing like racial stereotypes, like race in video games, right? But I'm like, this isn't like races. These are different species. And they specifically, you know, like, so there is something to be said about like this species is stronger because their species was created on a planet that has 10 times Earth's normal gravity. So they are, you know, like when they're walking around in Earth gravity, it's like us walking around on the moon, you know? So I kind of wanted to, you know, discuss that a little bit and pick your brain on it. So.
Yeah, I understand why that can be touchy for someone, right? To say like, well, but how is that different from like all drow are evil, or elves are like magically great at everything and the obvious best race in 2.0, like bar none, right? Like where the mechanical differences don't add flavor, they add obvious right and wrong choices, and then a lot of like unfortunate moral things that can go along with that, where it's like, oh, this race that resembles this, you know, fantasy race that resembles this real race of human beings sucks, right? And so it like reinforces these negative stereotypes or reinforces positive stereotypes, which are also bad. So I do understand why that is almost always fraught, right? On the other hand, I think you make an interesting distinction between a species is not the same as like black people and Japanese people look different from white people. So they get a +2 to something. It's like, no, the differences are not that deep. They are literally skin deep, right? Whereas aliens are aliens. So you might want to feel a little bit more of that difference. What I do think is an option is to say your under the hood characteristics we are going to make identical so that in the long run you can't say like, well, I started with a +2 in some stat and therefore became incredibly good at this thing, which gave me this super broken mechanical advantage. Is you start them under different conditions that will shape how the player maybe comes to the table, right? So if you have a race that's known, like an alien race that's known for like being super like crafty and stealthy, like the Romulans, right? So it's like, oh, they're all like 40 chests and everything all the time. So like, then make the first 30 minutes of the game for them all those kinds of interactions, right? It's not that other like races won't get those kinds of interactions, but these ones will be front loaded with a lot of that, which will then probably shape how they play that character because that's how they started, right? Make the Klingons start with a ton of combat because they're a warrior race. So like any human can be as good at combat as any Klingon, but because the Klingons were front loaded with a lot of combat, they're more likely to approach the whole game that way. And if they don't, what an interesting narrative change that would be, right? Because they're like, I started in this place of violence and then I decided that wasn't the life I wanted to lead. But you know, free to play games usually are not thinking machines in a case like this.
I'm less worried about this game doing it well and more like, how should it be handled in general? So one thing that I think would be really helpful is for more games to more heavily weigh background than race, you know? So like, and D&D kind of like 5e does this a bit, but like, so for example, let's say Klingons, right? You know, say like, if you, you know, so you say, I'm going to pick a Klingon as my species, right? And then you say like, okay, and I'm going to pick the Klingon warrior background. It's like, okay, cool. Then you're going to get that buff to strength because they're going to play on your natural strength. But if you pick like the Worf background, it's like, okay, your strength buff is actually going to be way less because you have spent, even though like you would have the natural like stronger ability, you know, you haven't spent as much time honing that, and like all of your time has been doing strength stuff, so we're going to beef out this and make you a little bit more normative. And then, you know, so then the question could become, all right, so do we want to make like, for again, for species, right? Because, and I think that you may raise a good point, which is that like when there is a species, a race that fantasy or sci-fi that has an obvious real world corollary, you've already screwed up, right? Like that's a problem.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If you have the space gypsies and it's like, oh, they're great merchants. And it's like, no, don't do that. Why did you do that?
Yeah. Or especially like, I mean, one of the I think seminal examples is it's like, well, you have elves. It's like, great. Well, you have white elves and black elves. And it's like, okay, what?
why would you have that?
Right. Like, why did you do it that way? Especially considering that they don't then say, well, you have white humans and black humans. Yours just humans, you know?
But it's like, yeah. Oh, but the white elves and the black elves are super different, you know?
Yeah. And it's just like, don't, why was it done that way? And there was a reason why it was done that way. But anyway, so I say that to say that, you know, so let's just keep it in the sci-fi aliens thing, right? I could see, you know, saying like, okay, well, and again, like it would be creating game balance, you know? So to say, and I think in Star Trek would be kind of like the ideal place to do it, because if you said, all right, your species will help modify some of your physical characteristics, and just to keep it in the realm of D&D, because I know that the best, like, so Klingons get a bonus to strength. Humans get a bonus to dexterity because we tend to be a little bit lighter and more nimble, or like we kind of are, you know, normal across the board. Andorians get like this bonus to their physicality, right? And it all kind of balances, right? And then your background is what determines your intelligence, wisdom, and charisma, right? Because that's like how you were raised and all this sort of stuff, right? Then you would then have to make sure though that the game. Oh, so the reason why I think that would work really well in Star Trek is because then just really make all of the physical characteristics like way lower priority, you know, because they should be, because you're on a starship, you know, like, so how physically strong you're
not, only Sulu fights with a fencing saber, everybody else has phasers.
Right. So like how strong or dexterous or whatever you are, shouldn't, it can come up occasionally, but it should be like, you know, oh, did you know if you build a Klingon that like you do use this, that, and the third perk, you can get their strength up to maximum. It's like, cool, but that's only going to be relevant 10% of the time. So actually what you're better off doing is maximizing a Klingon in any of these 10 different ways, because really the bonus, the initial bonus to strength that you get as a Klingon, or the initial bonus to dex that you get as a Trill is minor. The main thing that you should be worried about is your background, you know, and then that I think would be a better way to go with it, you know?
Yeah, I think personally I like putting all of the numbers about how you function mechanically into the background or the lineage or the life training, you know, where you went to high school, whatever. Because then it's completely innocent at that point, right? It is completely innocent on the topic of someone's natural abilities. You've now, if you're an idiot, you've shifted the problem to like, oh, well, this background is the rich kid background where you're just naturally better at everything, like all rich people are. Like you could move your bigotry from people's natural ability to like the circumstances of their birth. But it's so much easier to say like, oh, if you use like a general category, like warrior, right? Or like academic or philosopher, right? Things that people usually don't walk around say like, oh, hi, what do you do for a living? And it's like, I'm a philosopher, right? It's like, there are people like that, but usually that's not their entire, like how they consider every moment from their birth on, you know? So to say we've taken all the numbers stuff and we've said the warrior and the pirate and the merchant and whatever, like that's the way you've been living your life. And therefore it has moved these numbers in these directions. I like that, because I think that that's slightly less fraught, unless you are going out of your way to be a bigot. For a free-to-play game in particular, a lot of free-to-play games make their money off of like cosmetics and crap, and so I really think you actually have a financial incentive to decouple the way the player looks from the way the player functions mechanically, because you don't want to turn away people's money, right? If someone's like, oh, what's the like physically smallest, physically weakest race you can think of in the Star Trek universe?
Oh, there's one that's popping in my head. I can't picture it, but the Ferengi are very renowned to be.
Yeah.
Small, right. Weak.
Not warriors. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you pitted a Ferengi against a Klingon, my smart money would probably be on the Klingon, you know?
Right. So if someone just really wants to play a Ferengi, but they really like punching people in their dumb face as a way to solve their problems, then let them play a Ferengi who is the greatest warrior in the Federation. Like, because that person, maybe they really like the Ferengi's clothes, and so they're going to spend more money on buying Ferengi cosmetics because they like the Ferengi culture and they like the way they, you know, cut their suits or whatever. So, like, just let that person do that, because your goal is to get their money, and a good way to not turn people away is to let them basically do what they want, especially in a game like this. And another good way to not turn people away is to, like, bake weird bigotry into the character creation system, which is often, like, the first thing you do in a game like this. So, like, I'm for 100% mechanical stuff lives outside your race, your height, like any of the things that just make your character model look the way they look. Like, no mechanical stuff happens in those decisions.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because I think that that's also, because like I said, I think that I'm always interested in, you know, something done if it's done well. And I think that, to your point, right, the easy choice is to do what you're saying. And I think that that is the correct choice 90% of the time, because it's the same thing where it's like, you know, armor aesthetics should be decoupled from mechanics, because if you say, like, okay, well, you know, or again, you have to be careful with the way you do it, because if you say, like, okay, well, the male armor looks like a tank and the female armor looks like a bikini, it's like, that's fine if there's also a male bikini version and the best female armor isn't the bikini and the best male armor is the tank, right? Like, as long as the way it looks is decoupled from, it's fine to have bikini armor as long as that you're not being forced to wear it because it's the best mechanical choice, right? So I think that, you know, like, so for example, right, is that, let's say, again, I think that you could maybe tie some mechanics into species, right, in this case, right? But you'd have to be really careful with the way that you did it. And, like, so for example, like, if you said, you know, yep, if you wanted to beef out strength, right, so you're going to start as a Klingon, right, and you really, really want to be, you know, the best at punching people in the face, right? Then the best way to be the best at punching people in the face, you can get really good at punching people in the face if you have a lot of strength. And you can get really good at shooting people in the face if you have a lot of dex. But if you want to be the best at either one, you have to have a lot of both, right? So, you know, if you're like, I want to be a physical combatant, it's like, then that's great. You have to have, the best way to do that is to have both of these very high. And then you have the Ferengi start off with higher dex and the Klingon start off with higher strength. But then you say, like, but if you really want to be the best at all of them, then, you know, you get the whirlwind technique and that requires high in both, you know? And it, but you, again, like, and then you'd have to do that for every single possible end game combination, you know?
I like, conceptually, I like that, I think, because it means everyone has some, like, thing they might be naturally good at, but no one has a thing that they're naturally good at that is enough to be successful on its own, right? Like,
right.
No Klingon is ever the best Klingon just because they're the strongest Klingon, right? Because strength alone does not a warrior make, right? No diplomat is the best diplomat just because they're eloquent, right? Like, knowing big words does not a diplomat make. So I think we're a person trying to say, I want, because these are alien races, and I still want to have, like, some physical attributes that are attached to the alien races, right? Like the squid race that has six arms, like, they just naturally have a higher dexterity because they have no bones, right? Like, something like that. Like, I could see someone really saying, like, I don't want to completely...
The rock people have a high constitution because they have bananas hit points because right. They're made of rocks, you
yeah.
know, like...
Yeah, I can't imagine someone saying, like, I don't want to completely decouple it because these extremes are actual extremes, not fake D&D, we're secretly racist extremes, right? Like, they're this person is made of rocks, like, they're just different stuff. I think that would be a decent way to do it, to pull back and say, like, well, they have this bonus, but if they want to be the best warrior, they have to also work at this other thing that does not come naturally to them, because warrior requires these two abilities or these three abilities or this skill or whatever that no one has to start with. And then the reverse has to also be true, which is, if you start as, I think, like, I would remove, what would you call them, deficits, like no penalties, right? Because as soon as you start to introduce penalties, I think that's even worse than buffs, is because then you're saying like, oh, well, the rock people, because they're rock people, they're just not as smart as us meat sack people. And so they can never really be the best diplomats because they start with a -2 to intelligence. And it's like, no, don't do that. If someone wants to be the universe's greatest diplomat, but they happen to be made out of iron, then fine. Like, why? It's a fantasy universe. Why would you push this bigotry into the fantasy universe?
Well, and agreed. And so I think that like, it just, to, and again, you know, I'm not a professional or anything like that, but is it basically if you made the game such that like the end game play, like if you're going to be the level 60, right, is possible to be a level 60 with all of your stats effectively at 25 or 4 out of the 6, something like that, right? And that in order to get like in, so let's say that there's the punching people in the face, there's the shooting people in the face, and then there's the thinking people to death, whatever, those are the three
thinking people in the face.
Thinking people in the face and vicious mockery people in the face, right? Also known as the bard trajectory, right? Let's just say that those, whatever, right? Is that in order to, if there's like the, I want to be the best at beating people up, like at combat. Actually, let me decouple that. I want to be the best at combat, right? Versus like, I want to be the best at inventing things versus I want to be the best at this, right? If you, I want to be the best at combat, it's like, that's great. In order to be the best at that, then you will have to have 20 in all of your stats, just like everybody else, because the best combatant aren't ones that just break down the door. And yeah, you could say like tactics is one of your end game ones that requires your intelligence to be 20 because you're able to now see the battlefield and like you get a, you know, bonus to your armor class because it's harder for you to hit. The same way that the master tinkerer, it's like, yeah, you need a strength of 20. Why do you need a strength of 20? Because like you know, you can now say like metal as clay because you know now can use your fingers to like mold the metal exactly the way that you want it to be, right? That's why you need a high strength and high dexterity, even though it's mostly using your mind. It's because you can now perfectly mold this material, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, basically to then say, look, because then what it becomes about is that like if you say, all right, everybody has tens across the board is like the base and everybody gets a +2 and something, right? Then all it does is change your journey, not the destination, right? Because then you could say like, well, you know what? I really like shooting people in the face. So I'm going to go ahead and start with a Klingon because I really like the way the Klingon works. And that just means I got to spend the first three levels pumping my dex up, my first two levels to get my dex up to where it would normally have started as this other race. And then it's basically the same, you know? So it's like, oh, well, I got to spend an hour, but you know, then I've got this cool Klingon that started off all strong, but he never really believed in being strong. And he works this other pathway kind of a thing, you know? Again, though, it does then have to be, the game has to be deliberately treated in isolation from the real world where you start, because again, and this is the thing that's so frustrating, right? Is it's just like, you know, is all humans are humans, right? You know, so it's like when people are saying, you know, oh, well, you know, just like Klingons are stronger, this race is better at this. It's like, no, we are all tens. We're all tens and 11s at all, right? Like that's our base starting conditions because we're all human, right? This is an alien, or in theory, this is a fantasy race where they, you know, start with this different stuff, right? You know, like the Arakoan has hollow bones, you know, like they literally have hollow bones, right? You know, so they can fly, right? Like there's a physical difference. There's no physical difference like that with humans, you know, but then, you know, it always gets messy. So anyways, just thank you for discussing that with me.
No, you did make me think of one other thing that would actually be very near and dear to your heart, which is someplace where they, I think, do the opposite of this and like enforce limits is in survival horror games where the whole framework is not applied to an entire race or even to an entire group. It is applied to an individual. So here's what I'm thinking of. In the like game system you just described, everybody starts within like spitting distance of each other. But if you want to get to maximum strength as fast as possible, starting with the alien race that has a slightly higher strength will get you there, right? Like I just, instead of having maximum strength at level 12, I want to have it at level 9, and the Klingons can do that, right? So it's a level 20 cap. Everybody can get to the maximum strength by the midpoint, but I want to be there as early as possible, which, you know, lets you do the kinds of things that lets you do mechanically without, I think, projecting all of the onto it, right? In a game like The Last of Us, you cannot ever be the best at everything. You have to constantly make decisions. Do you upgrade how much damage your gun does, but it still sways because the grip is all broken? Do you take the medication that makes your hearing better, but you never, give yourself more HP? Like, by the end of the game, if you have scoured every drawer and every shelf and every corner, you still cannot max out all your weapons and you cannot max out all your abilities. But it doesn't feel like, oh, well, so what are you saying? Like, because Joel's a straight white guy, like he can never be the best at stuff. And it's like, no, we're saying that in these circumstances, Joel had to make these terrible trade-offs that limited how far he could go. And so you have to choose where you invest because your resources are so limited, right? When you apply what you can accomplish is limited to an individual in extreme circumstances, it's fine. When you apply what you can accomplish is limited to an entire race of people, that's racism.
Agreed. And I think that also too, just one last thing that I was thinking of as you were talking about this is I think that the main thing that you would have to avoid, right? As I think that you can say like, oh, well, certain races have these certain starting conditions, certain species, right? Things like that, right? But is that the minute that somebody is able to publish a verifiable article that says, if you want to be the best at this job, this is the race to do it, then you've got to retool your mechanics, right? Because it has to be any of the races can be any of the jobs. You know, now the pathway to get there may be a little bit different, right? But if it says like, oh no, that plus one to strength that you get, well, you know, then if you just dump everything into strength and then all of your remaining ones into dexterity, then you get this like perfect little mishmash that allows you to do this weird thing. It's like, nope, back to the drawing board. Then what you need to do is make the threshold a little bit lower to access that. So that way, if you didn't have that bonus to strength, you could still get there, you know, kind of a thing. But yeah, whenever I see articles that say, oh, here are the seven best races to be a cleric, I'm like, stop that. You know, they're all good races, Brent.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's, because neither of us have designed an entire role-playing game system, I think I would argue, and you, I think you said like 90% of cases is like, just decouple them, because it might be mathematically impossible to have variations that don't eventually cascade, because if you have systems that are complicated enough to be interesting, there's going to be edge cases you didn't consider, or there's, you know, like in a tabletop game, it's like rules as written versus rules as interpreted. So then like people can bring their biases and apply them. And it's like, oh, well, you know, if you interpret the rule this way, then this race is obviously brr, 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 brr. And it's like, oh crap. They like showed up with all their racism. Why are you doing that to my game? Right. So if you draw that line, you may potentially cut yourself off from some like interesting mechanical things that would make sense in a way that is not bigoted. Klingons have denser bones than Arakoka. We would expect them to be physically stronger, right? Like, but you also, most people probably wouldn't even notice the difference. They're just like, I picked my lineage and it's the good at punching people in the face lineage because I want to punch people in the face. And then they forget that they were ever separated and they just move on with their life, you know? Because I can easily imagine people like wanting to show up with their biases. Like they want to find examples in the media they consume that support it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And also too, like I think that, you know, again, like if you were to it's, I think I agree with kind of what we both said now is that like 90% of the time, just again, I think that it's going to be the, if you are not going to decouple them, like be aware that you've just made your job like 50% harder, and that's fine. You can probably make a very more deep, more interesting game. But if you're making shovelware because you're just trying to get something on the shelf, just decouple them and move on with life, you know? Unless you're like, no, I really think this has an interesting mechanic. And also too, like, even if it comes down to it and it's, you know, like, yes, you know what, if you pick this race and this class together, then, and you pick all of these exact things, then you do 2% more damage, right? Then it's like, or, you know, like you deal 20 more damage, but the cap is in the millions, right? So you deal like 0.2.
Yeah, hyper optimized isn't game breaking.
Right. And then all you have to do is just make it so that way there's interesting reasons to pick that suboptimal choice, right? To where the character isn't just a bunch of numbers that you're using to hit other numbers. It's like, yeah, that's true. But, and actually that would be accomplished by, and we don't have to keep talking about this, but that could be accomplished by incomparables, which Fallout 3 does very well, right? Because there are ways where if you're like, if you want to deal the most damage, then these are the feats that you, what are they, perks. These perks. Are the perks that you pick, right? And in Fallout 3, as we all know and have always known, you get a new perk at every level.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of my favorite mechanics from that game. I'll never forget it.
I remember that somebody beat that into you. So, anyways, so, but the thing is that there are some things that the game, some perks that you can pick that don't deal specifically with making the game, like making you more powerful. Like one of them is when you shoot people, they blow up into bloodier chunks, right?
I think that one's called like bloody mess.
Yeah. Right. You know, so it's just like, yeah. So if you want to pick, if you want to optimize the heck out of the character, then you can do it this way. But if you want to do these other weird fun things, then you won't have that, right? So if it's like, yes, I want to make the guy who's best at hitting things, and the best way to do that is make a Klingon with this lineage and this background. It's like, yeah, it's true. But then you can't do some of these other cool things that I just enjoy doing, you know, like, yeah, but then you can't hack a computer ever. And I like hacking computers sometimes, you know,
but then you won't have the weird Wild West perk that makes you find Indiana Jones inside the refrigerator out in the middle of the desert.
Right. Yeah. And it makes probably you start hallucinating.
The best Easter egg to come out of that movie existing.
I know. Right. But yeah. So what's your subject?
So the thing I want to ask you about, and I'm glad you had a meaty topic you had thought a little bit about, because I'm actually not exactly sure where I want to go with this. As everyone who's listened to any of this knows, I've just been playing the mess out of Final Fantasy 14. I actually forgot to say at the top that I also started Final Fantasy 15 today, which is like a regular single player one, because this summer Final Fantasy 16 comes out, and I said I will have played all of the numbered Final Fantasies and then like I'll be back on track, right? So the end of last year, I finally played Final Fantasy 8 and I was very sad about it, and like I just started Final Fantasy 15, which I have like mixed feelings about the theming and stuff going into it, but it might be fine. We'll see. I'm going to play through it. But I started also playing, you know, Theater Rhythm, which is all, I think there's also a Dragon Warrior version. But the, you know, the main game is like all Final Fantasy music. And I realized that, Final Fantasy was a game, and then it was a franchise. And then at some point it became a multimedia property, right? And this has been on my mind, not just because I've been playing like an unconscionable amount of Final Fantasy 14, but because as of this recording, about 10 days ago, the Super Mario Brothers movie came out. And they also, I think this year, like the end of last year, they opened up Super Nintendo Land, which is like all Mario crap and like some other properties, but mostly Mario crap, right? So Nintendo desperately wants Mario to be Mickey Mouse, right? This transcendent character that is recognized by people around the world. And that's why Mario is, he's got his own games, but he also has characters in his universe that are so beloved that they have their own series of games, right? Donkey Kong has his own series of games. Wario has two series of games. Like, Waluigi doesn't get anything because for some reason Nintendo hates him. Luigi has, like, even Princess Peach got a freaking game. Like, this is a property that spawns properties, right? There's a theme park now. There's the sports games. There's the karting games. There's the party games. I literally on the shelf next to me, I have a Lego CRT television that looks like it's playing the original Super Mario Brothers on a Lego Nintendo. Like it's a self-propelling flywheel, like capitalism merchandise machine. Final Fantasy is very much in that same vein. And I realized I don't know that that's like good necessarily, because I mean, I love Final Fantasy and I love Mario, and I'm glad they're still making Mario games. I loved Super Mario Odyssey. I hope they make another 3D Mario that's just as good. I've been enjoying Final Fantasy literally my entire life. I've been enjoying Mario literally my entire life, but like Sonic the Hedgehog has also been trying to like brute force his way into like the multimedia. Like there's the TV show, there's the movies, there's the games, but don't worry about those. Just give us money for other Sonic related reasons. Like
I was gonna say, I think that honestly the movies have been more successful at this point than most recent Sonic IP as far as video games go.
Yeah. Terrifying, right?
But the thing is, it's really more of a video game franchise than a movie franchise than a video game franchise at this point.
Yeah, and this is what I find concerning, right? I mean, like the larger capitalism, like capitalism question, kind of off to slightly one side for a second. If you are a fan of Mega Man, right? Mega Man had a cartoon for a while, and it was actually kind of good. Like it was sort of fun. And he's had some spin-off games and stuff. But if you like Mega Man X, right? Mega Man X is a great game. You're like, oh, I wish they would make more Mega Man X games, but they're trying so hard to make the Mega Man X anime happen, or the Mega Man X movie happen, or the Mega Man X comic book happen. It's like, you're the only people who can make me another Mega Man X game, right? You're the only people who can make me another Mario, another Final Fantasy, another Sonic, another, like, whatever this giant franchise is. They're the only people who can give you the thing that made you like it in the first place. But their job isn't to make video games. Their job is to make money. And if they can make more money off of Sonic as a character doing movies, then why ever make another video game? I just heard on another podcast that they disbanded the team that made Sonic Mania. And it's like, let's pretend that that's true for a second. I have not researched it because, you know, we don't do that. But what are you doing? it's the only universally beloved Sonic game you have made in 25 years. And you didn't beg those people to stay at any cost. Christian Whitehead, I think, is the name of the guy who like runs that little group of developers. Like, they should have just made him the president of Team Sonic. Like, give him whatever he wants to keep doing what he was doing. But that's the thing. It's not about making the best Sonic video game. It's about making the most money off of the Sonic IP, because that's what they actually own, right? Square Enix, what they own is the Final Fantasy IP. What Nintendo owns is the Mario IP. And like, they're companies. So if people said, you know what, the last Mario game was dumb, we don't really care, but the Mario movie, we loved that, like, can we get a sequel? Now Nintendo, I guess, is a movie company, right? Now Sega is a movie company. Now Final Fantasy or Square Enix is like a clothes and music company, because the fashion and the artistry of Final Fantasy has like, it's a like $1 billion industry, literally. It's ridiculous. So I don't know. What do you think about all this like insanity that I just spelled out?
So I've been trying to form an opinion as you've been talking, because it's not something I put a whole lot of thought into until you start saying it. But here's, I think, like off the top of my dome, here's my thought, which is that we vote with our money, right? So they will so let's take Mario, for example, right? Or any of them, but just to pick one. So Mario, they will, and let's just say that the company has limited resources, and they are the same resources that will go into, because arguably, even if they are different people, it eventually always boils down to money. They have a certain amount of money to pay people to go do stuff, right? So it's argued that that they could be exclusionary, right? So they have a choice of either making two movies or a movie and a video game, or two video games, right? You know, or a movie and t-shirts. So those are the same. We vote with our money, right? So basically, is that like, arguably, right? Let's say that you, me, and everybody, we all want the video games because we love the video games. We always want the video games. We're kind of lukewarm about the movies. We don't care. So we all vote with our money and we buy their latest video game. And then everybody else, and that video game makes us happy. It's well made, it's well done, and it makes us happy. And we say, we will continue to vote for this with our money, right? And then they put out the movie and it makes 10 times more money because 10 times more people vote for that movie. Arguably, it would be the correct moral decision to make the movie, because they're actually making more people happy. Those people just aren't us, you know? So I don't like that, right? but then what it just may be is that, like, it may be that... So again, like, I think that as long as you continue to support an IP with your... with voting with your money, right? That continues to do the things that you want it to do, which is to make quality video games, not make shovelware video games where it's like, oh, they used to make good video games, then they started making movies, and now these are actually movie video games, not video games anymore. You know, like, or like Spider-Man being a great example, where like they were making garbage video games, and then they made a good one, and it sold like hotcakes, right? So it's like, hey, make more of those.
More of those, please.
I say all that, though, to say that we may be in a life cycle now where it's like, Because what let's just say that, you know, we you find a series that you like, you play it, and they release, you know, the sequel after that, and everything's great. And then all of a sudden, once it gets picked up by a movie, you can expect the next one to be mediocre at best, and then they stop making them, right? And that may just be the life cycle of movies, as opposed, or video games now, as opposed to they would just make them and then they would just stop making them. But one way or another, they do stop making them. And then what do? You go find a new IP. And then we would go play that IP until, you know, they just stopped making games for it. The fact that they're making movies, like, we will play the video game series until they stop making good video games for it. Whether or not they're also making movies is kind of moot, you know?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. No, I think in a pure sense, that's probably an accurate representation, right? Because, I mean, look at Sonic the Hedgehog, right? I played the mess out of those games. Then I stopped super hard. I very much voted with my money because I was not happy with the games they were putting out. Then they put out a game I was happy with, and I voted with my money, right? In fact, I think I actually own 2 copies of that game because I think I have them on my Switch and on Steam. So
nice.
Yeah.
So you, like, really voted.
I really voted with my money. But there are specific instances that will always be the frustrating ones, right? Even if they still fit the mold you're describing, and even if they can't, it doesn't change your actions. Like, you either play the games or you don't. You either watch the movie or you don't. But it's not hard to imagine, like, oh, this series I like, you know, Flargon Man, like, it was a great series of games that I really enjoy. Oh crap, they just announced an anime for it. They're never going to release another game for this again, right?
No, that's a bummer. Yeah.
Because it's like, statistically, we are trying to, because everybody, who doesn't want to be Disney? If you are a company that owns intellectual property, your goal is to become the Walt Disney Corporation, because nobody does multi-platform better than the Walt Disney Corporation. They even have good video games, something they have historically been terrible at. Even they have still managed to be successful at it because they could take so many bites of the apple because they have all the money, right? Nintendo has a lot of beloved characters, but dollar for dollar, they're not as big of a company as you might imagine, right? And they need to feed each of those things, right? They have to keep their third parties happy. They also have to keep their own in-house, you know, Mario and the Metroid series and Legend of Zelda series, right? Like, they have to feed all of those beasts, which is why you almost never see the brand new Mario game and the brand new Legend of Zelda game come out in the same year, because they would be competing for the same dollars. So they would be like cutting into their own, right? But if they wait a minute, one person will buy both games instead of saying, well, I guess I can only afford one game this year, right? So like, they are walking a tighter rope, whereas the Walt Disney Company can just throw any amount of mess at the wall. Look at the number of Marvel and Star Wars shows that exist, right? Like, because if some of them are terrible, whatever, they'll make another one, right? But most companies that aspire to have a Disney-like multi-platform, we sell games, we do movies, we have TV shows, we write books, we have merch, we do t-shirts, we have a theme park, we have everything. They're never going to get there because you can't have 10 The Walt Disney Companies. Even Universal, which partnered with Warner Brothers, the biggest animation company that isn't The Walt Disney Company, still couldn't compete with The Walt Disney Company. Like, it's just, they are an outlier. And every time I see it, like, to me, the analogous thing in video games is Mario, if you're talking about like general familiarity. But honestly, Final Fantasy, there are more Final Fantasy spinoffs than core Final Fantasy games, probably by quadruple, like a lot. There's a lot of spinoff games. They do concerts. Last year, I went to a concert, a symphony orchestra played Final Fantasy music. Like, that's big culture. Like, that is a cultural touchstone that they could, if they wanted to, kind of dial back the video game part, the part I actually care about, and invest a lot more in their Final Fantasy 15 line of Funko Pops that I don't care about at all, right? And it's like, yes, I will vote with my dollars, but like, I don't want that Silver Surfer to land and be like, oh, by the way, crappy multi-platform merch is coming. And I'm like, couldn't you have just stopped making video games?
Well, especially too, when you kind of get the gut check that some people are voting poorly with their money, because it's like, hey man, I hate to tell you, but people, the votes are in, and Final Fantasy 17 is going to be a mobile free to play, you know? And it's just like, why? It's like, yeah, man, makes more money. It's like, but those people aren't even having fun. I would be having fun.
Yes.
They're voting poorly. So actually a great example of this. So the thing is that everything I said, I think to your point, right, in like a pure sense, I would stand by that. Right. But that doesn't take the emotion out of it. Right. You know, it's like, so what can you do? Right. So a great example of like my, of dealing with something similar to this is, Team Four Star and Dragon Ball Z Abridged, right? You know, because they made Dragon Ball Z Abridged and I loved Dragon Ball Z Abridged. I still quote it. I still watch it. It's amazing. And then they said, hey guys, we're not really making any money off of that. So we're going to continue to make weird video game reviews in Krillin's voice for like 2 hours. It's unscripted because it's way easier to do when we get to play video games. So we're done with the thing you like. We're going to do this other thing. Bye. And I'm like, and so again, like the thing is that ultimately they stopped making the thing that I liked. But the fact that they were like, we're not going to make the thing that you like, we're going to spend our time making, in my opinion, garbage that other people will eat. So we're not going to feed you. And I'm like, the fact that the other thing exists doesn't take away, doesn't change my situation, but it does make it more hateful. Like it does make the emotion worse, right? Because yes. You're like,
no, you don't have what I want. The key distinction. If I'm not happy, why do they get to be happy?
Yeah. It's like, that's garbage, man. Because like, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, you know, realistically, if they, you know, like what I have is purer or better or original or, you know, all of the logical fallacies appeal to ancestry, appeal to, you know, like,
you know, like
yeah. Right. Everything you can throw it at. Yeah, exactly. You're like this is the reason why everything's stupid and I should have what I want. But when it makes me think too about like the, you know, when somebody said, oh man, I can't believe those Star Wars sequels. George Lucas ruined my childhood. I'm like, you know, the originals still exist, right?
Still there. In fact, the VHS are still on your shelf. I can see them.
Yeah, I can see them from here, right? And it's just like, well, yeah, but now this other thing exists. And it's like, that in no way impugns your existing. Just pretend that doesn't exist. It's like, yeah, but it does exist. And I can't stop thinking about it. I'm like, that's silly. It's like, but now they're going to make a new Mario movie instead of a new Mario video game. I don't like it. So yeah, I think that the, And in situations like that, what I always have to come back to is just saying the mantra of like, this new thing doesn't hurt me. This new thing doesn't hurt me. You know?
Yeah. I think especially with media properties, there's no like objective moral. It's not like, oh, my town decided to take tax dollars and give it to the McDonald's corporation to build a new McDonald's instead of building a hospital and we don't have a hospital. So now we have two McDonald's and zero hospitals. Like you could say like there is a moral imperative to have a hospital in our small town instead of two McDonald's, but it's harder to say there's a moral imperative for this for-profit entertainment company to make the entertainment that I specifically want. But I don't know exactly how to get away from the like you gotta do the prayer beads and light your incense and just say the mantra like this new thing doesn't hurt. I like that a lot.
this thing doesn't hurt me. and again, like the thing that I think adds more bitterness to it is that like, because again, you're not getting the thing that you want, and I think it's legitimate, and I feel that more people, and this is going to get wildly philosophical, I feel more people should say this, which is you know, like I don't like this because it makes me unhappy. I don't need any other reason. Like, that's why I don't like it. That's not a good reason for anyone to change their behavior, but that is the reason why I'm upset. I'm upset because I'm not getting the thing that I want, right?
Yeah. It's not because it's objectively bad. It's not because it's hurting anyone. Like, I'm just not getting what I want.
Right. Like, I don't want you to eat mayonnaise with a spoon, not because it's like horrifying. I think that it is.
It doesn't hurt me.
It doesn't hurt me, but it grosses me out. And watching you do it grosses me out. So please stop. And it's like, oh, but this is how I get my calories. And it's like, I don't like this, you know? So I say that to say that the thing that adds bitterness to that coffee, right, to that tea, is the fact that arguably, if again, like if an entertainment company, and again, like this is entertainment, not hospitals, not food, right? Entertainment. If an entertainment company is focusing on profit, then they are arguably making more people happy, because if more people go to view the movie than buy the video game, right? Then,
And so more people are willing to pay money to go see the movie, then more people are happy, right? And since all it's being exchanged for is happiness.
So this is why pure utilitarianism doesn't work. Because human beings will willfully engage in something that does not make them happy, right? Like, people smoke cigarettes, people drink alcohol, and you could say, like, oh, well, those things have addictive qualities, and so it's not the same. It's like, right, but peer pressure also creates a kind of addictive quality. So, like, the fact that Avatar The Way of Water is, like, the, I think, first or second top grossing movie of all time makes me want to, like, drama, I write a cinema blog, kill myself. Like, it's, have you seen Avatar The Way of Water?
No, because I do not care about that franchise at all.
It is an objectively bad movie. It does things that movies shouldn't do because they make for bad movies. It is a bad movie. It's not a terrible movie. It's not even an unwatchable movie, but it is not a good movie. And it certainly should not be the highest grossing movie of all time. We live in a universe with The Godfather, for Christ's sake. Like, you're gonna tell me that in a universe with The Godfather and Back to the Future 1 and the original Ghostbusters, that Avatar, the we didn't know how to end this movie of water, should be the highest grossing movie of all time? That is objectively insulting. But what it does is confirm, as a single data point that I could unfortunately come up with other data points, it confirms that people do not necessarily in large enough quantities vote with their dollars for the things that they want, because sometimes they are voting out of peer pressure. I'm going to see Avatar The Way of Water for the 8th time because my husband seems to have a weird affinity for these blue cat people, and I am afraid he will have nothing to talk to me about if I don't go with him, right? So 50% of those ticket sales are disingenuous ticket sales, right? Like, it is, the casinos exist. Like, people do not only spend money on things that bring them happiness. So I don't know where, like, the tipping point is where people start doing things because other people are doing the thing, so they think they need to do the thing so that they don't seem like the weirdo for not doing the thing. You are great at this, right? You've never watched Avatar because you don't want to watch Avatar. They will never.
It kind of makes me like selfish, right? It's like, go do this thing because other people want you. No, I don't want to.
I don't want to do that, right? But I think a lot of movies, TV shows, video games, books, a lot of entertainment products, popular music, a lot of entertainment products would have their profits brutally slashed if everyone was actually purchasing it because they personally liked it. I mean, I'm guilty of this. You've probably at some point in your life done this where you're like, well, everybody wants to do the thing. Did you ever, when you were in college, did you ever go to a football game?
Yeah.
Did you want to be there?
No, I've never wanted to be at a football team in my life.
Right. Right. But the people who were counting your money didn't care. Right.
And tickets were free, though. To shoot that particular thing in the,
right, but yeah, conceptually. Yeah.
I conceptually get your point, but no, screw you. I didn't.
Yeah. No. Okay. But yeah, I mean, so like, I think I do agree with the general concept of, if Nintendo can make more people happy by making Mario movies than they can by making Mario games, then sure. But the system is more complicated. And also, I don't want more Mario movies. I want more Mario games.
The system's more complicated. I'm willing to say or do whatever I have to. And that's the thing, is that my only counter to everything you said, which is true, is, and if I wanted to be pedantic, what I'd say is, like, well, that's a really, really great theory that has absolutely no data to substantiate. Because Hank Green called it something, which I really love, which is, because I hear it all the time. I do it. Everybody does it, which is a hypothesis theory, right? Where you form a hypothesis, do no research or data collection, and then form a theory, right?
That middle part is very time consuming and expensive.
I don't want to do any of that. But yeah, I mean, like, so that's the thing, is that absent any other data, you could theoretically use, you know, the amount of money spent as a data point to correlate to happiness. But to your point, right, it is way more complicated than that. And, you know, like, so yeah, so the thing is that, but then at that point, the burden of proof would be on the person claiming the increase in complexity, which is the person who's saying, I'm not getting what I'm wanting, so, which is again, like, ultimately what we both kind of said is that that's the thing, right? Is that it's like, I agree with you, you know, like if I've got a game, if they said, hey, because The Last of Us on HBO was so awesome, we're just going to make The Last of Us the TV show and make no more The Last of Us movies, I'd be like, I don't like this TV series anymore. You know, like I'm not happy, you know, but even though like somebody, but like, honestly, watching The Last of Us the TV show, I was like, this is amazing because there are so many people that I've wanted to experience The Last of Us that I know don't have the games literacy to experience the game. Now they can kind of get it a little bit. And then I can kind of say, and now here's what the game does to really kind of focus you and all this other, but I can now discuss it with them. Right. So I was like, no, this is a good thing. But if all of a sudden they said like, yeah, but now you don't get the thing you want, I'm like, this is a bad thing.
The curtain falls. The music plays. The credits roll. Then it all fades to black. And you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone. There's no player two there by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head from the time that you spent traversing the land. Battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creep in with the edge of a smile. You realize again what you've lost for a while. You never think back much less.